The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Kveid HaRabonim, the Rebbetzins, and all very dear friends. Firstly, let me wish you a very good Chodesh. This month is a very special month, the month of Sivan, the third month of the going out of Egypt, and the time when Klal Yisrael received the Torah, of which we will again celebrate just in a few days. Now, the topic that was chosen for this evening was for me to relate some of the experiences that I had, which was a very great schus to be a Talmid in Yeshivas Tells in America for 9 years under the Telzer Rosh Yeshivas. And firstly, in order to appreciate such a situation, I would like to briefly give you a little history of Telzer Yeshiva. Now, Telzer Yeshiva was built in the city of Telz, which was not a large city. In fact, I think it was a small city in Lithuania. And this is something that is very close to people of this community, since the huge portion of Jews come from Lithuania, and there are many that come from Telz. Lithuania, for the past few hundred years, before the great Holocaust of the Second World War, had established centers of Torah, which were not only famous in that area of the world, and not only famous in Europe, but throughout the entire world. Talmidim, disciples, came from all shores of the world to study in these centers, and from these yeshivas went out great Talmidei Chachomim, great Rabbonim, great Rosh Yeshivas, great people that had great influence on molding the generations. Now, there was a Rav by the name of Reb Lazer Gordon, Zichreinu Livrocha, who was the Rav of Kelm. And in 1875, he became the Rav of Telz, and he established the yeshiva. He established it with a handful of Talmidim. One of the names that I have heard who was from the first group was someone who was to become a great Gaon later on, Reb Meir Atlas, Zichreinu Livrocha. Now, both of these names means something special to this community because the son of Reb Lazer Gordon, Reb Motel Gordon, Zichreinu Livrocha, later was to come and settle in South Africa. And his daughter, Dr. Mary Gordon, was to become a very well-known doctor. The fact is, I once read that she was the first woman instructor at the School of Medicine in Witz, and she was very, very well-known in this community, and there are relations here to this Gordon family. And the same thing with Remeya Atlas. I have come across relations here in this community to him. Reb Lazer himself was a disciple of the great Reb Yisrael Salanter. If we trace this back a little further, Reb Yisrael was a disciple of Reb Zundel Misalant. Reb Zundel studied by Reb Yitzchok of Elozhin, who was the son and the disciple of the great Reb Chaim Voloshin, who had established the Voloshin Yeshiva, which was known as the mother of all of the Litvish yeshivas, because all of the Litvish yeshivas virtually were established by disciples from Voloshin. And Reb Chaim was from the very close disciples of the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon needs no introduction. Also, there are many, many people in this community who trace their yichus, their relationship, back to him. He was the great Gaon who lived in Vilna in the late 1700s or early 1800s, whose name has gone throughout the world, not only in his generation, but for all generations. So actually, Reb Lazer, therefore, was a direct descendant in Torah to the Vilna Gaon. He was a person of tremendous spirit, tremendous force, a gibor chayil, full of emotion, full of ambition, and with an extraordinary love for the study of the Torah and the teaching of Torah. And all of this he interjected into his work in the small city of Telz, in the establishment of the yeshiva. Fact is, it said on him that when he would be studying Torah or he would be engaged in a Torah conversation with someone, there was nothing in the world that could distract him. Understandably, it was not easy to establish a yeshiva in those days. The poverty was tremendous in that area of the world, and the Jews lacked no tzoris from their goyish neighbors, and they were under the ruling hand of the Tsar of Russia. So it wasn't easy to establish a yeshiva. But with all of the great effort in Mesiras Nefesh, the giving of life and soul of this individual, the yeshiva flourished. He had such a great love for Torah that he wanted to establish a place of Torah that would attract the greatest students of Torah and would have the greatest Rosh Yeshivas of Torah. And therefore he tried his hardest to attract to this place great names in Torah. And he brought the great Reb Shimon Shkop, also who has descendants in this community, to become one of the Rosh Yeshivas. Actually, it was a relative of his. I've heard that, I believe he was married to his niece. Reb Shimon later on was to become, he was 18 years in Telz and then went and established his own yeshivas. And later, in later years, he was to become known as the Rosh Yeshiva's Rosh Yeshiva, because so many of his disciples, they themselves became Rosh Yeshivas in Lithuania. And then he brought his son-in-law into the yeshiva, the great Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch, Zichreinu Livracha, and he brought Reb Chaim Rabinowitz, who later on became known simply as Reb Chaim Telzer, who for some 40 years said famous shiurim in Telz through to hundreds and hundreds of disciples. And with all of these, the great efforts of this individual, even though he had tremendous obstacles against him, he established the Telz Yeshiva. There's a legend which is said, and it's been recorded in writing, that when Reb Lazer was born, he was born in a small village and there was no male. So he had to be taken to another city where there was a male. It was winter time, so his parents, his father, bundled him up. This was Lithuanian Russian winters, bundled them up in blankets, And they put him on the back of a sled, which was drawn by horses, and they set out for the next city. Somewhere along the journey, as they were going through the countryside over the bumpy, icy, snowy roads, they took a look in the back of the sled, and to their terror, the baby wasn't there. He had fallen off. They quickly turned the sled around and went back to look for him. And there they came to a place where the baby was all bundled up in the snow, and there was a wolf standing over the baby, guarding him. This is a legend that they say under the blazer, and it's been written. And perhaps it's true. At any rate, from this individual, who later on was to become from the Gedali Hador, the leaders of his generation, came the foundation of the Telzer Yeshiva. To testify to the single greatness of Reb Lezer, there's another story that the great Reb Chaim Briske, the Rav of Brisk, was marrying off his daughter, and at the Chasana were all of the great Lithuanian Gedei. When it came time to be Masada Kedushin, to perform the marriage ceremony, so there was the question, who should be given the honor of performing the ceremony? There were so many illustrious figures there. So Reb Chaim said, it must go to Reb Lezer Telzer. There's two versions as to what Reb Chaim said. From one relative, I heard that Reb Chaim had said it must go to Reb Lezer because it is a Maravich Torah, because he has planted and spread so much Torah. From my Rebbe, Reb Gifter, he said no. He checked with the family, and the family said the story was because of his Avas HaTorah, that there was no one that had such a love and a zeal for Torah. In the year 1910, a great fire broke out in Telz, which destroyed a great many homes in the city, and also the yeshiva. So the city became impoverished, and the yeshiva was in an awful state, and the Lezer decided that he must go outside of Lithuania to raise urgent funds for the yeshiva. He traveled to London, and because of the difficulty of the journey and the stress and everything else, in London he died in 1910. And he is buried in one of the old cemeteries in London. But he left the yeshiva with a great many of his disciples to carry on his work. He once said, "Tell the yeshiva that zayin a greisha yeshiva, ob ich weiss net, ob ich will tanzen af en chasana." Tell the yeshiva will become a great yeshiva, but I don't know if I will dance at the chasana. His next generation took over. The great Reb Chaim Telzer, and then the great Reb Shimon, and the great Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch. Rabbi Yosef Leib became the Rosh Yeshiva afterwards, and he had three great sons. His oldest was by the name of Reb Zalman, middle son Reb Avram Yitzchok, and the youngest son Reb Elie Meir. And together with them and other great disciples, Reb Chaim had a very, very great son, Reb Azriel Rabinowitz. They made him to Telzer Yeshiva one of the very greatest yeshivas that Lithuania saw. Thousands of Talmidim came to study there. not only from Lithuania, but from Germany, and from England, and from the United States, and from South Africa. And under the leadership of Rabbi Yosef Leib, they carried their work further. He created a system of Hadorim in the city. He created a machina, a preparatory school to the yeshiva, a high school. He created a Yavne girls' high school and seminary. He created a Machon Lemachanchim, an institution. He said we need to produce Rabbonim, but we need to produce educators also, an institution to produce Torah educators. And Tel tells you, the city of Telz was transformed into a massive merkaz, center of Torah education, which literally had thousands participating in it. A few of the great names, just to mention a few, that came out of the yeshiva was the Ponovitch Rav Zichreinu Levracha. He was a Talmud there, very well known in this community. The Gaon Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky, who was held as the Godel Hador, the greatest of the generation in the past generation. After leaving Lithuania, he became the head of the London Beis Din. Then he retired to Eretz Yisrael. There was a great name by the name of Ramotel Pagamansky, who was a legend in Lithuania. Rebbe Lachonan Wasserman was also a very well-known name in this community, and so forth. Eventually, the middle son of Rebbe Avraham Yitzchok became the Rosh Yeshiva after his father's death. And together with a Mahanholo, a staff of top Rosh Yeshivas, they created a Malchus of Torah, an empire of Torah and of Torah education. One Godel once remarked in Telz, even the fields, when you walked through the fields, you could feel the Torah in the air. In 1940, give or take a half a year or a year, they saw trouble ahead of them. They always had great trouble from the Russians. But now there was a new Tzora which was coming from the West. They heard what was happening in Nazi Germany. Most people didn't believe it. One tells the Rosh Yeshiva, told me, he was a student in the yeshiva then, that the Churban was often tear. The Churban was right by the door, but people did not want to leave because it meant they had to go to Russia. Russia was a known enemy, and they were very afraid of the Russians. Nazi Germany was someone they never had experience with, and these were just stories. They didn't know whether to believe it. But at that time, the Telzer Hanhola saw trouble was coming. And they said that a plan, we must make some strategy. And two people must leave and find their way to America. When they're in America, they must work on passports and visas and funds in order to bring the whole yeshiva over. Yeshiva was a big yeshiva. Probably the yeshiva gedola had maybe 400 or 500 students in it, not counting all of the other institutions. Nobody wanted to go because it was a journey that could take 6 months. It meant going through Russia, through Siberia, through the Far East, crossing the Pacific, with problems of passports and visas and everything else. Nobody wanted to go and be separated from their families. And there's always the fear of the unknown. So they threw lots. The lots fell on Rebbe Yemeir, the youngest son of Rebbe Yosef Leib. And Reb Chaim Mordechai Katz, Zichreinu Lebracha, who was a son-in-law of Reb Yosef Leib. These were two brother-in-laws. Reb Eliezer was one of the Rosh Yeshivas in the yeshiva, and Reb Chaim Mordechai was the Reish HaKolel. Reb Mordechai Katz is also a well-known name here in South Africa, because his parents settled in South Africa. His parents were Yekela and Rochelea Katz, who were members of the Beis HaMedrash HaGodol. And there is a Dr. Sam Katz, a retired psychiatrist and neurologist living in Johannesburg, and that's a younger brother to Remotel Zichreinu Lebracha. So they made their way the long trek through Siberia till they finally came to the United States. Once they came to the United States, they came to New York, and they met with Rabbonim and spoke about bringing over everyone. But soon after, they received the news that the Nazis had invaded Lithuania. And the news kept coming little by little of great, great tragedies. They worked feverishly to try to bring over what they could. But there was a tremendous blackout of news. They made their way to Cleveland, Ohio. That's a large industrial city with about 100,000 Jews, but basically a very large conservative and reform community. It's about 500 miles out of New York. And they started to rebuild Tel Yeshiva. It wasn't easy. Two people coming, uprooted from their families. They didn't know the language, English. They weren't accustomed to America. No longer were they dealing with the Lithuanian Talmud or the great Malchus Shel Torah, the empire of Torah that Lithuania had, but they were dealing with the American student and the American public. So you can imagine it wasn't easy at all, and especially with the tremendous stress of not knowing what's happening back home. They rolled up their sleeves and they extended tremendous, tremendous effort of heart and soul, and they built a yeshiva. This was the extension of the Tel Yeshiva that Reb Lazer Gordon had founded. It flourished. It became a great center of Torah. In my time, there were 300 Talmidim students there. They built an academy, a day school, which today has somewhere near 1,000 students in the city. They built a machina, a preparatory school, a high school, and a kollel, and a yavne for girls, and a machon lemechanchim, a preparatory school for educators, everything that they had in Lithuania. And in 1975, the Tel Yeshiva celebrated its 100th anniversary. Today, it's over 100 years. It wasn't long after they came that they started to receive the heartbreaking news that there was no Tel Yeshiva left to bring over. Nazis invaded Lithuania and the city of Telz, and in one day finished off the yeshiva in the city. And there were very few survivors. Both Reb Eliezer and Reb Motel lost almost their entire families, wives with children. Eventually, through the 40s, survivors started to come. Students that had escaped through Siberia and were in Siberia for a number of years, and other Rosh Yeshivas, they started to come, and they made their way to Telz in Cleveland and joined the yeshiva. And this was the foundation of the American branch of the Telz yeshiva. The fact is, they spread their wings even further, and they built a branch of the Tel Yeshiva in Chicago. Eretz Yisrael, they've had several undertakings of yeshivas, and their influence has been felt all through the United States. I came to the yeshiva in 1953, and I studied there till 1962. It wasn't long after that many of these people had just come, and many of them could not speak English yet. In fact, is most of the Rosh Yeshivas knew very little English. And the Rebbe Meir and the Remotkai, Remotel Katz, were the Rosh Yeshivas. Rebbe Meir lived for another year and a half while I was there, and the Remotel Katz was still the Rosh Yeshiva in 1962 when I left. He died in 1965. After their deaths, then a fourth generation took over. One was Reb Baruch Sorotkin, Zichreinu Livracha, became one of the Rosh Yeshivas. Reb Baruch was a grandson or a great-grandson, a great-grandson to Reb Lazer Gordon, and also a son-in-law to Rav Yitzchok, who was the last Rosh Yeshiva when the Nazis invaded Europe. Another is Yibodel Lechaim, still today, my Rebbe Rav Mordechai Gifter, who was a son-in-law to one of the three sons, to Reb Zalman. And much of the staff are the descendants or the disciples, Reb Chaim Stein, who was the leading Talmud of the yeshiva and a disciple from the great Reb Chaim Telzer. And therefore, they saw to it that the traditions of Telz should be carried on. So this is a brief history of the Telz yeshiva. Let's spend a few minutes trying to learn from the deeds of these great people, from their principles, and from what they stood for, which is so important, and especially in our generation, where we live in such a very confused world. Because after all, there was a constant emphasis on tradition, that the values and the principles and the directions that were laid down by Reb Lazer or by Reb Yosef Leib, other founders of the yeshiva, should always be carried through. And these were the great disciples of Reb Yisrael Salanter and the others that go right up to the Talmidim, the disciples of the Vilna Gaon. Firstly, there was a tremendous emphasis on Avas HaTorah, the love of Torah, Simchas HaTorah, the joy of studying Torah, Amenis B'Torah, labor in Torah, and Gadlus B'Torah, the striving for greatness in Torah. And all of these qualities are qualities that they inherited from their predecessors. The attitude is the central point of all of Israel and for the whole world, is Torah and the study of Torah. And it was continually said over in the name of Reb Chaim Volozhin, Im Leibrisi Chukas Shamayim Voretz Le Im Leibrisi Yemen Velaylo Chukas Shamayim Voretz Le Samtiv. Kodesh Baruch Hu says that if not for my covenant that should be studied day and night, then I will remove the creation. That all this Torah must be studied day and night somewhere in Israel. Because of this, Reb Chaim, when he established the Volozhin Yeshiva, he used to have a group of disciples studying around the clock, so there shouldn't be an interruption in the Torah study. They say that when it came to
Mitzvah Yom Kippur, the end of Yom Kippur, and everybody had to rush to eat. So Reb Chaim himself would take that shift. He would stay in the Beis HaMedrash until someone came back. The purpose of a yeshiva, its prime and highest goal, is to educate and prepare individuals great in Torah. And in this there were no limitations. Great in Torah doesn't mean you learn a daf gemara. You understand a piece of Gemara. Greatness in Torah means greatness in all of the Shas. That you learn a piece of Gemara 20 times, 30 times, 40 times. This is why Lithuania produced such extraordinary Gaonim. For example, we heard a talk just recently on the great Gaon Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was a product of this Lithuania. The joy of learning Torah was something that was extraordinary that you found in Telz in all of Lithuania. Lithuania was a very poor country, very impoverished, both by the Jews and by the Goyim. And there was very little opportunity. There was not much when it came to universities or culture or so forth. This was minimal. And the fact is, the life of the Goy was a life of misery. But the Jew was an aristocrat. The average peasant, he couldn't read, he couldn't write. It was common that if he had a paper that had to be signed, he brought it to his Jewish neighbor and asked him to sign it or read it for him. The Jew was aristocrat because he was tremendously educated. Everyone went to a cheder in Lithuania. Not everyone was able to continue because life was so difficult. But it was the ambition of every family that a member of that family should go further. They should go on to what we would call a yeshiva high school, they called yeshiva ketana. And there was even a greater ambition that perhaps they would have a yeshiva bocher from their family that would go on to one of the yeshiva gdolos, to Telz, to Panovitz, to Mir, to Slobodka. So the people, the Jews, represented an aristocracy, and their entire joy came from Torah. And this is something that you see special by the Lithuanian Jews. In Telz, with all of the tzoras that they suffered and all of the hardship, if you were speaking and learning with one of the Rosh Hashivas, or he was saying a shir, it was all forgotten. He was totally relaxed, and the greatest radiance of simcha came on their face. And there was always so much to talk about, because there was such a great love for Torah. The fact is, whenever I speak with one of the Lithuanian lomdim in Torah, and this is only by them though, I've spoken to people from many other sections of the world, but only by them, you never finish the conversation in Torah. It's never finished. You just have to end it. But it's never finished. Because they were so into it, and they had such a bond to it, and such a love, that the more you spoke about, the more became opened to speak about further. And it went from one thing to the other to the other. It was always difficult. Who should have the chance to say what? This was the great love and the great joy. There was a tremendous labor of Torah. The Hasmoda, day and night, to labor. If you don't understand something, you learn it twice. You learn it 3 times. You learn it 10 times. You learn it 20 times. And to strive for greatness in the wisdom of Torah. Now these qualities were qualities that were emphasized not only in Telz but in all of the Lithuanian yeshivas. However, there were some qualities that seemed to be more related, more particular to Telz. One, for example, Mesiras Nefesh for Torah in Yisrael, the giving of oneself totally, to the point where he's ready to give his life for Torah and for Israel. Harbotzes Torah, the spreading of Torah. Avas Yisrael, the love for Jews, and Achrayis Yisrael, assuming responsibility. When this group of Rosh Yeshivas came over to America, they accepted upon themselves the task to rebuild Telz Yeshiva, full stop. They were prepared that there is nothing in the world that's going to stop them. Nothing. Let all of America stand up against them. They will continue until they have succeeded in rebuilding Telz Yeshiva. And this no doubt came from the Zayde Reb Lezer and his descendants. They had tremendous obstacles. The American public was not such an easy public to deal with. They were stunned because they were coming from Lithuania, the crown of Torah. Here all of a sudden there were conservatives, reforms, non-believers and whatnot, and people didn't know what you needed yeshivas for and so forth, and this is America, they used to tell them. To give you a few examples of the stubbornness, the obstinance of Rebbe Yemeir Zichreinu Livracha, they say over that at one time he was going to address a gathering which had to do with raising funds for the yeshiva. It was shortly after he came, and he hadn't heard yet what happened to his family. Right before the gathering, he was given a telegram. He knew that this telegram would tell him what was the fate of his family that he left in Europe. And he cleared a shiloh. If he would open and read the telegram now, and if it's bad news, it'll break him, and he won't be able to address the gathering. On the other hand, he's been waiting to hear something for months and months and months. He set the telegram aside, and he refused to look at it until he finished his talk to the people, in order that it should not disturb the building of the yeshiva. Later on, it was the telegram to tell him that his family was wiped out. Another example: when he died in 1955, shortly after his death, there was planned a major banquet. In America, it's customary that the yeshivas and other institutions for stocker have major banquets for fundraising affairs. There was planned a major banquet. The Rosh Yeshivas didn't know what to do, because here it was right after his death, and it passed it. It wouldn't be right to go ahead with the banquet. But then a letter was opened that he had left. In the letter he wrote that he makes very clear instructions that he does not want these, he wants these instructions to be obeyed under all circumstances. That his death in no way should come in conflict for any undertaking of the yeshiva. So they had to go ahead with the banquet. This was his hanhoga. This was their way. Not only did they take a responsibility that they must rebuild Telz Yeshiva, they took upon their shoulders a responsibility for the entire world. They held it was there, and this is what they instructed the Talmidim. They held it was their duty, it was their direction in life to build Torah for Jews all over. And especially after such a churban, after such a holocaust. One time someone told the mortal, he said, you know, this world is a different world. What you're doing here is not, this is not Europe. This is not Lithuania. This is a different world. He answered him and he said, you work for this world. He says, what I lost in Europe and all of the other Jews, that's for this world. He says, for this world, it's not worth it. We work for all worlds, and we have a job to do. They would instruct that it is the obligation of every individual to grow in Torah and then to go out and to teach Torah to other people if he's capable. And they were known as the Yeshiva of Harbotzes Torah, of spreading Torah. And this is something that was particular in Taos. Other yeshivas didn't want this. The fact is, when they came to America, everyone told them to build in New York because that's the place of Jews. They said, no, we didn't come to spread Torah in New York. We came to spread Torah in America. And therefore, they went into America. When it came to spreading Torah, there were no limitations. America, all of America, Canada, Mexico, Eretz Israel, South America, and even South Africa. When I came to the yeshiva, there were already 3 South Africans studying there. Because one of the founders of Torah in this community, Yeshiva College, was Rav Merkin. And he had studied in Tells in Europe. So therefore he, together with Remichel Kosovsky, Zichrono Berocha, sent students there. Then when they wanted to establish further here, they wrote to Tells to send us someone. Tells didn't turn around and say, send to South Africa, are you out of your mind? Leave America? No. They came to older Talmidim, and they impressed him with the importance of going to South Africa to build Torah, because there are Jews there and there is not enough Torah there. And this is how Rabbi David Sanders, many of you know him, came to this community. The fact is, I myself am a product of this Harbotzes Torah, because I lived in a city, Midwest city, Minneapolis, 20,000 Jews. Not a very strong Jewish community at that time. And there was a day school. Actually, it was founded by my late father, Zichrono Livracha. And because the community had a great conservative influence, they wouldn't support the Orthodox day school. So it was battling. And they sent out an SOS, and Tells heard about it. So Tells, for 4 years, sent out graduate students or senior students to staff the day school. And it was through this influence that a whole group of Minneapolis students went on to the Tells Yeshiva. The Avas HaTorah, the Avas Israel, the love for Israel, this also was without bounds. The obligation was to care for Jews, all Jews. Many times you hear, it's not my responsibility, Jews over there. Let them move to Johannesburg, let them move to New York. Jews outside of Israel are not my responsibility. This is something we never heard in Tells. But one carries a responsibility for all Jews. There were no distinctions. And all of this to the degree of Mesiras Nefesh. They taught, don't put your all needs in front of the needs of the klal, in front of the needs of the tzibur. Don't worry about what you need. You worry about what the tzibur, what Yisrael needs. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of you. To the point of Mesiras Nefesh, of giving up one's entire personal life for this. Once a young Telzer visited Eretz Yisrael, and he went to visit the Chazen Ish, Zichrein Lebrach. The Chazen Ish originally was from Vilna, he was a Litvak. Then he went to Bnei Brak, and he was from the towering giants of that generation. And he brought regards to him from the Rosh Yeshivas. So I asked him, what did the Chazen Ish tell you? He said, you're from Telz, Doten, they schaffen Soldaten. Telz, there they make soldiers. This is what the Chazen Ish told him. Another principle that was emphasized in Telz, a Jew must be a Gamsa Jew. Shlemus. He must be complete. They didn't hold for emphasizing one facet of the Torah or two facets of the Torah. Like today, many times you hear a tremendous overemphasis on a single facet of the Torah. People come and they ask me, tell me, how come almost anything we hear today is kashrus? They said, in the old days, kashrus is very, very important. We kept kosher. But there wasn't so much discussion and talk where it took up very little to talk about. Emphasis was placed on all facets of the Torah. Not only the principles we just spoke about, but great emphasis was placed on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. What should be the conduct of one man towards his fellow man? The mitzvahs that have to do with dinim ominous, with money dealings between your fellow man, theft, business, truthfulness, damages, lashon hara, or perfection of one's midos, one's traits, one's qualities, chesed, kindliness, humility, truthfulness, compassion, edelkeit, that a person should be refined, conduct. When I was in St. Louis, this was long after I left the yeshiva, one time a guest speaker came there. He was from New York. He was a rabbi. And he spoke, and he said, why do yeshivas teach students to daven and to learn and all such mitzvahs, but on all of the other mitzvahs that have to do between man and his fellow man, this they don't emphasize? And I got up and I said, if you'll excuse me, but I studied 9 years in Telz Yeshiva, and to me the emphasis was just on, more emphasis on the other facet. He says, it's very interesting. He says, I never studied in Telz Yeshiva. I didn't know such a thing existed. This was something which existed in all of the Lithuanian yeshivas. And that's why you people that remember your fathers or your zaydis, you remember that Torah was not limited to one or two or three mitzvahs, but it was limited, if that's the word for it, to 613. And then they were very adamant that it must all flow from Torah. Many times we would hear the phrase frumkeit. They didn't like that. Frumkeit, that's a religion. We're interested in Torah. Everything a Jew does must flow from the source of Torah, not from other sources. Another quality which was emphasized in Telz, Derech Eretz. Much time was spent by the Rosh Yeshivas speaking about Derech Eretz, Ayid Avzayna Mensch. A person, a Jew, must be a gentleman. They used to say, a Telzer is a mensch, a Telzer is a gentleman. And Kiddush Shem Shamayim Barabim, Wherever he goes, he must sanctify the name of Hashem publicly. Rabbi Elimelech used to say, my whole life I dedicated to this principle, that I should bring honor to the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he would see a bocher who did something that brought shame to the name of Torah, that brought shame to the name of the Almighty, this was the greatest tragedy that he could experience. They were very insistent that a bocher, when he goes out, he must be dressed properly. If he's wearing tzitzis, they must be worn properly. His clothing must be impeccable. His manners must be impeccable. His speech must be impeccable. They were very insistent on this. And actually they were shocked, because the European level of conduct and a gentlemanly fashion was much higher than that of the American youth. And they were shocked when they had to start dealing with American youth. I remember once they were sitting at a table at Shalashudis, and there was a bocher drinking a Coca-Cola out of a bottle. In America, this is acceptable. The bottle looked at him and said, Okta, she could drink from a fleshel. We drink from a fleshel. You drink from a bottle. And they spent a great deal of time teaching this. The Gemara says, Leilem Teidaitem Urevis Ben Abrius. A person must learn how to get along with people. And he must mix with people. And Rashi says, Shiyase Lechol Echot Ve'Echot Kitzeinei. He must do in his interaction with people, he must treat every individual the way that individual would like to be treated. This is a whole study in psychology, that you must recognize every individual, what he likes, and this is how you must treat every individual. These were qualities that were tremendously emphasized. And even amongst the goyim, they used to say that the mitzvah of sanctifying Hashem's name is not only amongst Jews, amongst goyim also. The Moshe used to quote that Moshe Rabbeinu told HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to kill all of the Jews in the desert, he says, if you'll kill all the Jews, Loma Yemru Mitzrayim, why should Egypt say that you took everyone out to kill them? Loma Yemru Agoyim, why? Ramatul used to say, what's the difference what Egypt would say? Egypt were a bunch of murderers. What's the difference what the goyim would say? Now, you see, there is a difference. That even amongst goyim, they would say, of someone who learned Torah, then he must be an ambassador for Torah and for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wherever he goes. Another quality that was emphasized was, and this is emphasized in Rambam and in Gemara, a Jew must walk in the middle path. He must not be an extreme. Even though there were great, great Talmidei Chachomim, great Lomdim, Gedolei Hador, he must not be extreme. They used to quote very often Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, he would say, Al tia tzadik harbe, don't be too righteous. Val tischachim yesim idai. You should be righteous, but not too righteous. You should be wise, but not too wise. It's suklug. Lomiti shemem. Because if you're going to be too righteous and too wise, you're going to find that you're no longer part of the community. You're on the sidelines. You become divorced from the community, you become estranged, remote. And a Jew must be Seichair. He must walk amongst people. They used to say, don't go to the right and don't go to the left. Walk straight. Derech HaYoshur. When it comes to halacha, this is the same thing that Rabbi Lapin said over from Ramesh Feinstein. They weren't interested in chumras. They were not the least interested in going beyond the halacha, and they weren't interested in kulas, in being lenient, more lenient than the halacha. They were interested in what the halacha is, what it says. And once they knew what the halacha said, they could not care about anything else. The time is getting late. There's much more to... Someone asked me, how am I going to say over 9 years of experience in 1 hour? So we have to come to a close. But let me mention just one final quality. They had a great kovod harabonos. They had a great respect for rabbonim. They knew what rabbonos was, because in Lithuania they served both as the Rosh Hashivas and the rabbonim. Reb Lezer was the Rav of the city, and then he was the Rosh Hashiva of the yeshiva. And traditionally, the Rosh Hashiva was the Mori de Asra. He was the Rav of the city. When they came to America, then they gave up the Rabbonis. They weren't the Rabbonim of Cleveland. Cleveland already had the Rabbonim when they came there. So they became merely the Rosh Hashivas. But being traditionally Rabbonim, they knew what Rabbonis is, and they had a great covet at Rabbonis. They had a great kovod for the communal order. For example, it was their policy in Cleveland never to mix into any rabbonish esek. Anything that belonged to the jurisdiction of the rabbonim, the Rosh Hashivas never mixed in. They didn't mix into kashrus. Any questions of kashrus, they would say, you must ask the rabbonim of the city. What they say, that's what it is, finished. They didn't mix into gittin, anything that belonged to the rabbonim. This belonged to the rabbonim, and you adhere to it. When I went to St. Louis, this was a good number of years after I left the yeshiva, my wife and I and family moved to St. Louis. St. Louis had a very, very nice community, was the largest Jewish community in the Midwest of America. And there they had a very, very fine Rav, Rav Nachum Zvi Eichenstein, Zichreinu Livracha, that I had this chus to serve him closely for 6 years. The first thing my Rebbe Rav Gifter told me, when you go to the city, go and introduce yourself to the Rav and become close to the Rav. This was his first instructions. Something which I followed, and I never regretted. Then he wrote another time, and this was a time when Kovod HaRabbonos was disintegrating throughout America, because people would come in from all different places, and everybody was making Shabbos Mezuzah Halein. And the whole Kovod HaRabbonos was disintegrating today, like similarly, like we see it happening in other places, and here in Johannesburg, and in Eretz Yisrael, and other places. Another time he wrote, now St. Louis, America does not have organized kehillas like South Africa has. About the only exception was St. Louis. And it was under fire. Even though it had such a great role, but there were new people coming, and new graduates of various yeshivas coming, and new people moving into the community from different ways, and they had plenty of complaints. They had complaints on the educational system, and they had complaints on the Rav, and they had complaints on the kashrus, and the whole gamut. So the Gifter wrote me once, Ir St. Louis, he ulai, or Ir Yechido, America, the city of St. Louis is probably the only city left that there has remained a form, a structure of an organized kehila. Therefore guard it very, very carefully. Lithuania, this was known. Lithuania, every city, every community had its kehillah, and the Rav was the head of it, and nobody ever argued with the Rav in Lithuania what he said. They used to say, I had a friend whose mother used to say, the Rav, this is the Shulchan Aruch. What the Rav says is the Shulchan Aruch. If someone would say the Rav says like this, but the Shulchan Aruch says differently, she would say, what do you mean? The Rav, this is the Shulchan Aruch. Another example, there came a time while I was in St. Louis where there became a big skirmish, a big dispute, where many of the a strong group in the city didn't want to rely on the kashrus of the city and the kashrus of the Rav. And my colleague, who was the head of the day school, and I was also teaching in the day school at that time, so the question arose, how should we teach the children? They had certain complaints against certain shechting, and therefore they didn't want to eat from that shechita. And it was possible to get other meat if it would be transported in from New York and so forth. What should we teach the children? Should we go into this with the children and tell them this or that? There was a whole business over it. So the questions were written to Rav Gifter. So very concisely, Rav Gifter wrote back this principle. What you as an individual want to do, this is your prerogative. You want to eat the meat, ask us today. You don't want to eat it, don't eat it. This is your prerogative. But if you do anything that will undermine the authority of the Rav, then I tell you, Osid Litein Es Adin, in the world to come you will pay for that. That was one statement he wrote. Another statement, you want to eat from the Sheikhet, ask his underhead, you don't want to, don't eat. But if you do anything that will undermine the kashrus of this Sheikhet, when according to the deen it's not justified, you will pay dearly for that. That will be an Aveira that you will pay dearly for. And then he said another statement. He said, your question, what you should teach the children, he says, I don't understand this question. The Chichayev, the Lamed, the Tinekes, Chumre Shel Ayochid, are we obligated to teach children chumras that individuals want to undertake upon themselves? You must teach the children that the Rav is the halacha in the city. And what he says, he said, finished. And anyone who brings chumras, people that want to do more than the deen, brings them to the public or brings them into the educational system of children, he says, then he will also have to pay very dearly for that. He says, you want to keep a chumra yourself, this is your prerogative, then you do it privately. These are the statements that he wrote. And this was the instruction all the time in Telos. You go to a community, you go to bring Torah to that community, not to bring machlekes. You go to a community, you go to reinforce the authority of the Rav, not, heaven forbid, to undermine it. And this was something because, first of all, they were great Balei Torah, so they understood this. Secondly, these were the communities, the great communities of Lithuania. And thirdly, they had come from a tradition of Rabbonim themselves. So this is a few principles, values, that perhaps we can learn from these very, very great individuals that truly executed a miracle to come to a land barren of Torah, to come without possessions, without families. When Europe was burning their families and the yeshiva was burning in the fires of the Holocaust, and to roll up their sleeves and to build, rebuild. It tells the yeshiva on the values which were established in its foundation. This is something which is unbelievable. And I hope that this evening we all can take home some of these values, learn from this and grow from this, and halavai we should see the continuity of Torah, greatness in Torah throughout the entire world, throughout the Gola and in Eretz Yisrael, until we witness the coming of the Mashiach and we see the Haromas Keren HaTorah, the return of the great crown of Torah to Yisrael. Thank you.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.